You're listening to Signal to Noise on the Pro Sound Web Podcast Network. This episode is brought to you by the following sponsors: Allen & Heath and their new CQ series, a trio of compact digital mixers for musicians and bands, audio engineers, home producers, small venues, and AV installers, placing ease of use and speed of setup at the heart of the user experience. RCF, who just unveiled their new TT Plus audio brand, including the high-performance GTX series line arrays, and the GTS-29 subwoofer. Be sure to check it out at rcf-usa.com. That's rcf-usa.com. I wish I could break free, back to where I'm supposed to be. I wish I could break free, back to where I'm supposed to be. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Signal to Noise. I'm your host, Andy Levis. Back with me after his crazy week away from us last week is my co-host, the ever-present, except for last week, Sean Walker. What's up, Sean?
What's up, y'all? I'm partying, aka drinking coffee at O-Dark 30 and then trying to figure out paperwork, as always.
I was going to say, I just got really concerned because I looked at my laptop clock and it's still in your time zone because that's where I was the last few days. And
yeah,
I was
shoot me in the face, bro. Yeah, thanks for the corporate hours for podcasting.
Yeah, no, we appreciate it. But we're going to be talking corporate stuff on that. But speaking of corporate-y things, a little bit of housekeeping I want to throw out at the top of the episode again, because we'd been forgetting to do it for a while, is one, if y'all are listening on a podcast app like Apple Podcasts or Overcast or any of those, hit it up even right now while you're listening. Share it with any friends you think would enjoy the show. And if you're enjoying the show, give us a rating, 5 stars, we love. That helps new people find us.
Let me be honest. If it's not 5 stars, don't rate it. Just give us the 5-star rating and move on. Yeah. Like, we don't need any of those 1 stars. Like, I know it's my fault. I'm sorry. Just cuss me out privately, but give the 5-star in public. You know what I mean?
Speaking of which, if you want to let us know what you don't like or what you do, hit us up via email, signal2noise@prosoundweb.com. That's the number 2, signal2noise@prosoundweb.com. Let us know what you think. If you've got a cool thing you want to talk about on the show, let us know, like, hey, I think I'd make a cool guest. And if we agree, we'll invite you on. If we don't agree, we'll probably invite you on too. And we get desperate some weeks. What are you?
Right.
And then also, those of you who listened last week, we did a test run of a new feature we're trying out with answering listener questions and sharing some tips and tricks. And so if you've got a question you want to ask us or ask, past or future guests of the show, record that. There's links in the show notes, but basically you can either record it yourself and email it to us, or email it to us and one of us will read it in our beautiful dulcet tones. Or if you go to speakpipe.com/S2N, you can actually leave a voicemail right there. You don't have to get crazy. You don't have to set up a mic. It can sound like it's recorded on a phone. It's kind of a casual thing. And we'd love to keep that going and get some more questions. So hit us up. And again, if you've got tips and tricks you want to share, do that too. Like, quick tips are awesome, and that you get to hear stuff that's not from just the two of us and our guests. So, let's rock that out. And now that you all are sick of me talking and soliloquying on my own, why don't we go around and we'll introduce our panel this week. We've got a few guests with us. We're doing a little bit of a roundtable on corporate event audio, which is kind of fresh in my mind because I just flew back from a gig yesterday and boy, are my arms tired.
Yeah, right, totally. And I'm kind of stoked to nerd on some corporate audio stuff, I got to be honest. I spent a lot of time.
We spend a lot of time talking about like music stuff, and some of it's similar, but some of it's not. Like, we can talk about the best kick drum or snare sound forever, but like, what about the best speech sound in a hotel ballroom? That's a very tricky and different thing, but it can be a very lucrative thing if you're good at it. And I think
I got to be good at it too? Damn it, Andy.
Or you've at least got to hire the people that are good at it. Speaking of which, I think we've got three of the
Then the guys I'm calling are on this podcast right now, so perfect. Leave your number in the bottom of the chat.
Right? we got three of the best. First of all, joining us again after guest hosting last week, and no conspiracy theories, don't read into it. It just happens he's the perfect guy to tag in 2 weeks in a row because we know people are going to start being like, is he going to be on the show permanently? Is Aaron Pelagian. What's up, Aaron?
Hey, how's it going?
And then the next virtual, I keep saying virtual box like y'all can see it at home, but I'm going to keep doing it because I see him there. But in the next box over is the one, the only Michael Curtis. What up, Michael?
Hello.
Sup,
and then literally phoning it in for us this week is my friend and yours, the one and only Brian Maddox.
I love that. He's just phoning it in, you know, just barely. It's like I'm actually driving, and so I'm actually doing two things at once, not just phoning it in.
And we're going to get back to doing two things at once a little later on the podcast, so I appreciate the
segue. You said I couldn't make those jokes anymore, Andy.
we'll see. We'll see. We'll see how that goes. yeah, I don't know. Do we want to do a quick round of coolest thing, or should we just hit it hot and heavy?
Hot and heavy, bro, every time.
All right. We'll come back around. I got a new coolest thing that Sean knows what it is, but we'll talk about that later because it'll be relevant. Yeah, so corporate stuff, like we were talking before, I think one of the things I really want to get into is like signal chain, and you know, whether you're doing everything in the console or like outboard stuff or how much that varies, and getting like clean, clear vocals for corporate events, because it is a very different beast. I mean, I'll throw out the first question because this is one of those things that like people get real religious about, and I feel like I'm the oddity here. Omnilavs or cardioid?
Who gets to jump in first?
I mean, you just opened your mouth.
You spoke up.
I just opened my mouth, so there you go. I'm a big cardioid lav in the PA. So if we're talking about PA applications, I'm a big cardioid lav person, and I think you're right. I know you're sort of an Omni guy. But then a lot of that's just, you know, if you're going to use cardioids just work better for me in a lot of suboptimal situations. Sometimes, you know, sometimes corporates are essentially glorified breakout rooms that people are willing to spend money on. And so, you know, the speaker placement may not be ideal. You may get a presenter that wants to run out in front of the PA or do all kinds of crazy stuff. So, you know, I'm still sort of an old school WL-185, sure, you know, cardioid lav guy.
The beer can.
Yeah, the beer can, which, you know, it's they're horrible. They're huge. They don't look good on camera, but they consistently, you know, sound good and are easy to get a good sound out of through a wide variety of stuff. Now, headset mics is a different discussion altogether, but sticking with lavs, that's my two cents.
Yeah, I'm laughing at the size thing because literally sitting on my desk that I'm not even sure where they came from, I've got one of the little double mounts for WL-185s, which is like the most ridiculous thing you can clip on somebody, but sometimes you need it.
Brian, you said that it's better in suboptimal situations. In your entire career, can you count on more than one hand anytime you've had an optimal corporate situation to put a lav in?
They are extremely rare.
Yeah, all right, cool. I just making sure it was just not my experience, and it was kind of, you know, with everybody here.
All right.
Usually optimal for a corporate gig means it's actually at a performing venue.
Right, totally.
Not right. In a ballroom. Totally. Anywhere but a ballroom.
Not the short way in a ballroom.
Those aren't reflective. Right.
So the PA is set up, and the video screens are out of the way. That's a good start.
Yeah. Well, while you're talking, what about you, Aaron? What's your feeling on that?
I'm actually also on Team Cardioid Lavs for
my man.
Most of the corporate stuff I've done. Just basically echoing what everything Brian said, I just have a better feel of what's going to happen. It's a lot more predictable. And I've had the experience of having them side by side in the same situation where I had a show up in Boston a bunch of years ago where somehow a WL-183 got mixed in with all the 185s, and my A2 didn't catch it because there's windscreens on everything. And sure enough, at one point, one of the panel comes out on stage and one of the mics is like way different than everything else and way harder to control. And then immediately that alarm bell goes off of like, can you just take a look at that when that comes back and tell me if what I think happened? And sure enough. So, yeah.
Dude, they look the same.
Was.
With the foam wind cover on, they look identical. It's so hard. We had the same thing one time. I was like, what is wrong with this thing? Because it's literally the same housing and everything. There's no way you could tell from front of the house.
And what about you, Michael? Are you on the same boat?
I am. I'm going to solidify the hat trick here. And I go with the WL-185s as well. I like you said, it's nice if you can get in like a controllable environment, the Omni and the Rich Low and all this stuff. But I guess intelligibility always ends up trumping absolute natural Morgan Freeman richness in most of the corporate situations. So it's great if you can get both, but in the hierarchy of things, I'm always thinking of that intelligibility and controllability and dependability first. So Team Cardioid.
Right, thanks, fellas. Your check's in the mail. We actually called each other earlier just to gang up on Andy. So it would be Team Cardioid versus this fucking guy.
Yeah.
So to be fair, I never want the only mic option I have on site to be Omni, because I don't want to be the asshole who insisted on it and then tucks his tail the whole way home when it bites me in the ass. But if possible, I always want the option. And part of it is because I'm a fucking theater nerd. So I'm used to like pulling every trick out of my pocket to wring every last bit of gain out of an Omni. And part of it is I've been bitten so many times by a cardioid that's either placed wrong, flopped to the side, or like it's a panel discussion. So we put the presenters on his one side and the panelists on the other side. And as they go on stage, they swap sides. And now everybody's turned away from them. Which the other reason, which goes into like Andy's everybody's most expensive friend category, is I'm less picky about it if I can get DPA 4080s, because that DPA thing, they sound the same but quieter off axis. So like I feel a little less like that, whereas like a 185, like it sounds great on axis, but as soon as you get off axis, it's a totally different microphone.
Totally.
So it's one of those, like, because I am comfortable that I can wring a lot out of an Omni, I'll usually try that first. But I do know that puts me in a minority. And I do know, like, talking to other friends, it seems like those of us who tend that way almost exclusively come from a theater background where we're just used to having to deal with that. But yeah, it's always a question I like to ask just to see if I'm the crazy one.
Well, and not to, you know, vacillate my answer, but every single point you just made is valid. Like, for sure. One of the classic, oh, I put the microphone on the wrong side and or the right side, and then the presenter went to the other side of the stage, is one of my, you know, huge pet peeves, or just the turning of the head back and forth. And, you know, a lot of times you have to, you know, dial in a whole bunch of what I end up doing is dial in a whole bunch of low end hack on a dynamic EQ, so that when they turn their head towards the microphone, the proximity effect is a bit negated. But you're right, it's an Omni sounds a million times better. So it's, you know, horses for courses.
I also think that there's an element of taking note of what your presenters are like and the kind of show it is. If you are doing an event that has a lot of people that do a lot of public speaking up in front, chances are an Omni Lav might definitely be a good choice, because they're going to actually project enough that you won't have to work as hard. Whereas if you're doing a lot more casual kinds of events where it's just, I won't just say random people, but, you know, internal team, you know, internal events with internal teams that don't do a lot of public speaking, everyone's first rodeo, that extra little bit of pickup you get from a cardioid, you know, knowing that you're rolling the dice as far as placement goes, but that extra little bit helps when you have someone who's just deathly quiet and you need to get something out of it.
Totally. And as far as placement goes, are you guys beating your A2s like I am, or are you guys like nice to them and they do a good job? Or because I pretty much just flog them until that thing's in the right spot and then let them go on stage.
So I actually, if it's someone that I've not worked with before, or if I'm training, meaning it's like an A2 that's not a full-time A2, they're just an audio tech who is my A2 for the gig, I will actually show them what I want, tell them what I'm looking for, and then actually make them do it to me, like make them pretend I'm a presenter and put a lav on me so that I can sit there and help them along the way and give them some tips.
Dude, that's super smart. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah,
go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've come to is, especially if I can get a center placement on a lav, I'm getting farther down the body than I used to, because the PAs have gotten so, the pattern control on PAs have gotten so much better that I can get away with a little bit less proximity. And when you do that, then you get a little bit more consistent sound with regards to when people turn their head. If you just think of it in terms of geometry, if the microphone is like right underneath their chin or, you know, right up close to the collar, then as they're turning their head and moving, you get a very different, you know, it's moving in across the axis a lot more. So a lot of times I'll go another button down than I would have done 10 years ago, just because I can get away with it from a gain before feedback standpoint.
It's kind of like a range ratio when you're doing PA stuff, right, Michael? Where you just you get it all, exactly. So it's not quite so close to it and doesn't make such a difference from front to back, side to side, same kind of thing, right?
Exactly.
And then one question for, you know, all y'all bad motherfoyas, where do you like to put those labs? Like physically, like how many buttons or where on the person, or you know what I mean? Where's your favorite spot for your lav?
If we get the privilege of having a nice press thick collared shirt, that is
so both times that it wasn't an IT company. Got it.
Yeah. Right. is basically the second button down and resting on that bottom button as like a little support. And then a little tiny small square thing of gaff right behind it to make sure it sticks, and then cable down. I will say sometimes, as you've probably done much more than us, Andy, you have to get really creative with how you mount things. I was doing an event. A woman had a turtleneck. It was insistent on not using a handheld. My A2 did a good job. But it was very thin, but the element actually ended up resting up against where her, I guess this is weird, her Adam's apple would be if she had one. But it just vibrated, and like you could hear the distortion in the microphone. Oof. Like the actual element. And so that's what I've been bitten.
This is where Aram and I chime in and refer everybody back to last week's episode with Mark Russey of Lav Magnet. Plug.
Yes. So yeah. I wish I had one of those.
Yeah. Dude, we carry one of the DPA necklace microphones just for that situation, just so you can whip it out of a work box and be like, hey, guess what? You're going to wear this today. And by the way, somebody's getting an invoice.
Yes. So all I have to say... keeping with the cardio thing, always making sure and pointing it back towards the mouth if you have to put it on the side. So I do like the little 45-degree angle increments on the Shure lavs. And then I'm sure Aaron and Brian have more to add here.
Well, and I kind of already threw in my 2 cents worth. And yeah, that's I actually spend more time, I think, with A2s that I don't know well, talking to them about if they can't get it in the center because there isn't a nice collared shirt and it has to go on a jacket or it has to go on a side, making sure that I want this pointed right at as much at their mouth as I can possibly get. Like, you know, make sure we get that angle right. And I would rather have a secure position on the lapel of a jacket than an insecure position on a blouse that might flop or do whatever, because I can always work with it being off axis. But if it flops, you know, flops down in the middle of the presentation, then one, it looks silly. And two, I've got, you know, a major audio problem.
Right on.
Totally.
I know I'm ending up in much the same places. I think when I do try a directional next, I am going to try that trick from Brian and drop it down a little lower. Like when I'm using an Omni, I'm generally getting further up. And again, their proximity isn't an issue. So, and likewise there, if I'm using an Omni, the placement and the closeness is giving me some of that gain before feedback that I need.
Totally.
Yeah, I think there's one other tangential subject off of lavs I want to get to, but I'm going to circle back to that if nobody has anything else immediately on lavs. I have another question before we get to...
I had a question. How do you guys handle your extra cable? You're clipping onto someone's waistband or belt or something.
Sure.
What do you do with that cable? I have seen every variety of... stuffing it in pockets, stuffing it in waistbands, and trying to wrap it around the pack. And yeah, what have you found is the best way to
make that an efficient
process?
I just make sure to cop a feel and get a good relationship going. You know what I mean? No,
and the rest Michael of us appreciate saying, Sean giving us that much more work in the future.
Yeah, 100%. That's why I call you guys and they don't let me on site. But like you guys said, right? If you get a nice button up shirt, drop it down the shirt, come out the last button around the belt, through the belt loops, and then into a pocket or side and just tuck that in the, we just tuck the extras in the pocket, or sometimes make a little coil and tuck it in the belt, between the belt and the pants itself or whatever, if they're wearing a jacket, if you can't see it. But, you know, really anything you can do depending on their garment to hide it, get rid of it, secure it, you know, whatever, but in a position that it's not going to pull itself out as they flail around on stage. And, you know, depending on the presenter, they can be crazy or they can be real boring. And if they're going to be crazy, you got to give them a little extra lead room, you know?
Yeah, like as much as there's pluses and minuses of like the pivot where like post-pandemic everybody's gone more casual, like I miss being able to always put it in the inside coat pocket and just stuff all the cable right in there.
Dude, totally.
I usually, as far as order of operations when I'm micing up somebody, I'll run the cable down and then leave actually the capsule hanging out. If it's, assuming it's in the center, I'll leave it hanging. I'll actually clip that on last and I'll come back, put it on the pack, and I usually circle up around the clip and back around, basically like a 270, and then see how much, and then I'll have it back tucked behind. So that's almost like a little way to kind of pinch it at the belt so it doesn't pull on the actual connector itself. And I'll see how much slack I have depending on the height of the person. And then I'll try to make that same little 270 loop inside the jacket or shirt so that nothing actually has a direct line to straight pull down, if that makes sense. And that usually ends up eating most of the slack up. But
like
nothing
a bunch
wrong.
Of strain relief, basically.
Yeah. So just like it's two concentric strain reliefs that go around, but it kind of pinches at the bottom. And always, if someone's wearing a jacket and we're doing on there, I always end up gaffing twice the little squares on the inside of the jacket along it, just so their elbows or something in the side doesn't do it. So that's it.
Yeah. And on that front, I'm going to throw out a trick I picked up years ago from the late, great Jim Lovell, one of the best A2s I had the privilege of working with many times over the years. And Jim would always tear off a bunch of like half-inch strips of gaff tape in both black and white and put them, when he was wearing a jacket, on the underside of his lapel, just like pre-done there. So anytime you're micing somebody up, you can just steal one of those off. And if you have to tack it to the back of a tie or to the inside of the coat, you got it right there. And it does two things. A, it keeps you from fumbling for the roll of gaff tape. And B, because you've already pre-stuck it to your coat a little bit, it's not quite as sticky. So if you're putting it on an expensive tie like we were talking about last week, or a nice coat, it's not going to pull off quite as much of the fuzz and be as much of an issue. Yeah, although also like there's more and more clips out these days that have the little retainer thing on the backside of it for the cable to help kind of dress the cable around the tie or the jacket, which depends on the brand and model of clip. Some of them work really well. Some of them it's more hassle than it's worth, I think. Yeah, and I'm also, yeah, like kind of I try and go behind the buttons when it's a button-up shirt. Again, with the throwing out like toys that help with that, there's either the mic drop or the lav bullet from is it Sound Guy Solutions, I think, which are both little weights that are actually made with a connector on it to attach to the connector of the lav and just help it right down inside the jacket. The lav bullet's nice and sleek and it looks like a bullet, which is why I don't use it for fly dates because the TSA does not appreciate it. So I'm actually in the process of changing out. They now, because of that issue, make one called the mic drop that looks almost like a little like stainless steel SM58 with a lav connector at the bottom. And is a little more, it just looks like a weird totem and not like something that the TSA is going to immediately tackle you for. If they can tuck it in their waistband, that's great. I kind of try and balance it out. Like if I know if they're going to be behind a lectern or if it's like a camera only thing and they're like chest up, then I won't necessarily pick that battle with folks, but if the jacket's going to be buttoned. But if it is, I try and I don't want to be the one with the sloppy cable.
Dude, 100%.
Whatever you do, Brian, Aaron, either of you got anything to add on that?
Yeah, you guys pretty much hit all the high spots, and I especially like the strain relief on both sides kind of thing. It's like make sure it's clipped behind on using the mic clip, and then yeah, the kind of single spin or clipped in with the belt pack. Because again, you know, people are going to move around, and it's gotten a lot better. They've manufactured them tighter, but the weakest link is always the connector going into the belt pack, and anything that you can do to relieve strain off of that so you don't end up with, you know, the sudden crackles on stage is fantastic.
Oh, and last little thought, depending on when your RF LPDAs or whatever antennas are, making sure the belt pack ends up on that side of the hip. If it, or if they're like sitting down so it can just have the most line of sight.
Oh yeah. You know, that's the thing. Lots of corporate folks don't think about that. Like we run into theater a lot is like, just there are certain bodies particularly that just like something about people's body chemistry, like can really soak up a lot of that RF energy if the antenna is in the wrong spot. Yeah. So the other tangent off that I wanted to go on is, lectern mics. Love them, hate them, what do you do with them? Talking specifically mics, I think we'll circle back around for both lavs and lecterns and talk about processing after. But, since my mouth is already yammering on, I'll answer first, which is I always want it out because, again, like having cardioids when I'm using Omnis, I never want to be the reason we don't have a backup, but I try to never use it unless I have to. I will offer, if it's there, use the lav if they've got one. A trick I've heard about recently, and I'm trying to remember if this came from one of y'all or somebody else that I haven't had a chance to try yet, only because I haven't needed to rely on a lectern, is doing two mics on a lectern. One that's the big standard obvious gooseneck that is 90% there just as a decoy so the presenter can come up and mess with it to their heart's content and not make your day suck. And then using either a shorter gooseneck or a wider one, or like even like the little mini shotgun, like an AKG 747 down at the bottom, that gives you your consistent placement of what you're actually going to use, but that they don't notice and or just it's far enough away that they can't touch and mess with. So I'm intrigued to try that next chance I get, because it seems like it could be a potential happy medium of the two. But yeah, curious to see what other folks do or don't do.
One of you geniuses came up with the two mic idea. I'm stealing it and using it. That's fucking awesome. Because every time, guaranteed, the first thing you do is grab that fucking podium mic and start whipping it around and shit. You're like reaching for the mute button as fast as you can so it stops crackling in the PA. Like that's awesome. I'm stealing that for sure.
Yeah, that's how I got it. Yeah. I can't remember who it was. Like, I don't know. Was that a you thing, Brian, maybe? Or was that somebody else?
No, and I, you know, it's funny. I have a technique I used to use, and I think I'm just going to start carrying the kit to go back to it because it worked so well. I used to use it with AKG CK series, but basically any series of small SDC. Where you can put an extension cable in between the capsule and the body so that you just have, you know, just the capsule. But I'm talking about, you know, think like the Sheps, like the regular sized, a capsule, putting two of those on an over under SM57 clip, the old presidential clip. You squish the clip down in a vice grip so that they fit over under in one of those clips, and then you used like 4 or 5 inch hard gooseneck, so short gooseneck,
mm-hmm.
right in the center of the lectern. What you end up with is a lectern mic that's probably a foot and a half away from the presenter. It's so short that they don't move it because it's like weird, like it's not right up in their face. They don't move it. I'll use a hypercardioid capsule and a cardioid capsule, but this is a trick that I used to use, and except in a situation where, you know, I had gain before feedback problems or a really really echoey room where the distance between the lectern mic and the person's speaking was, you know, problematic just because of all the extra sound coming into the mic. Absolutely my favorite trick, because it solved the moving the microphone around. I got way more consistent signal with regards to when people moved side to side. I could get two presenters up on the lectern, switch to that cardioid versus the hyper, and it sounded supernatural. Not supernatural, but very natural. And so, yeah, like still one of my favorites. I might even go back to trying that, but maybe use the Audix microbooms, which are just fantastic sounding microphones for lecterns. Told the story many times, but we did, Chris Leonard and I did a thing with a Sheps and a Audix microboom as the backup for a fairly well-known religious leader.
Wink, wink,
nudge, nudge. And I ended up using the microboom for like 90% of the show. It sounded so good right next to the Sheps and sounded so good. And the wind rejection was even better. And then we ended up having a bunch of wind at the last second. So that's my out of the box idea when it comes to lectern mics.
I like it. And yeah, I gotta check out the microboom, because the one that always pops to mind for me is, I know DPA in their Goosenecks makes a really short gooseneck version, which I've thought a few times about picking up for my own kit at some point. And the nice thing there is a lot of those capsules are swappable too. So, you know, aside from money being an object, you can get like different lengths of goosenecks or not and swap them out as needed. But yeah, I've thought about getting that real, real short one for that too, with like one of those, like the 4020 series capsels or whatever on it.
It's really an interesting thing, what it does with the psychology of a presenter, because when they don't have the microphone right up there where they can grab it, when it's kind of far away, I've had them like kind of touch it and like they move it like a micrometer, you know, micro inch. And then they just sort of go, I don't know what to do with that. And it's kind of like the presidential mic kit where President Clinton was always famous for, every single time he walked up on stage, he would grab the mic and move it up a half inch and down a half inch and then let go of it. Because it was so far away, it was like, how far can you move it? And like that, it helps to get away from, you know, the microphone way off the side or whatever. And just the awkwardness of people moving the mics and the next person is a foot shorter and it's up in their eyeballs and everything else.
All right, Aaron, Michael, anything to add there?
I also enjoy Brian's trick of having a cardioid and a hyper, even just with the Shure 185, or I guess MX 412s, 418s, but surprise, it's a 185 element on the end. And so I actually carry
those tricksters
183s, 184s, and 185s. Omni, hyper, and cardioid, so that I have all the options. And a lot of times, what I'll do, if depending on how the geometry of the lectern works, I'll lay it out so they're the microphones are top bottom, not side side. And the top one, I'll make the hyper, so that way if someone's really tall, there's the reach. And then if someone's short, they're a lot closer to the card, and I end up using the card most of the time. And then just takes a couple minutes overall, you know, and we can talk about this a little bit on the processing side. Overall, the feedback situation with those is similar enough that you can ring them out pretty similarly and then just adjust for the tonality difference on the individual channel EQ.
Michael, anything else to add?
I think the only thing is, I had a buddy who ended up finding a 3D print file for a little double Lego man hands that takes the 412 goosenecks it has in there, and because it used to be like e-tape or just something awful looking, but it's the cleanest, smallest black little thing. I need to find it. It's open source and share it with the community, but basically all the processing and tricks these guys have it covered, but it's the handiest little, basically two opposing little Lego man hands that do it.
That's pretty cool. That's super cool. All right, talk to me about this microboom.
It exists.
No, I know, but what I'm saying is, you've said it now a couple times. They've said it in the community a bunch of times, and now I went on the website and finally looked at it. It's bigger than I thought. Like, it's a long ass stick. Like, what? How are you guys deploying that? It's not. It doesn't look like a direct replacement for a 412, right?
Yeah, it's not. And so It depends. There's a few different ways to do it now. And there's also different mics in the Microboom collection, but like the other mics I was talking about, you can get the extension wire so that the element and the body of the mic are separated so that then you have a much smaller element.
Gotcha.
To deal with. And yeah, you can put that on a traditional, you know, just a regular full size gooseneck. Again, the reach on those things is I hate that for microphones, but you guys know what I mean. Is remarkable. I mean, the amount of pattern control and side rejection is remarkable. So yeah, you have to get a little bit more creative with the mounting because it's not quite as. But again, it goes back to me to my thought of, if I've got reasonable my PA placement, so that I don't have a ton of PA wash on stage, the farther away I can get that lectern mic from the person. This is totally counterintuitive, but just it's worked for me. The farther away I can get that microphone from the presenter and still get a good enough gain before feedback and not get too much room in the lectern mic, the happier I am, because it makes a much more consistent from person to person. And even when the person moves around or they move their head or whatever, that whole angle to the microphone thing, you know, you end up with much less change in the ratio of distance to microphone. So yeah.
Anybody else have anything to add to that before we tip into that processing side of it? So yeah, why don't we dip into processing? I mean, we can start. I think amongst all of us, we've all at least experimented with both like entirely in the console and with adding outboard stuff in. So maybe we touch into that a bit and just what tips and tricks we got. Aaron looks like he's chomping at the bit to go.
Yeah, I really it's worth discussing what are the tools that we can use. What are all of them? Lay them all out and then. And then talk about how we use them. But so in any console that we're using, you know, there is presumably some sort of EQ, and there's often a channel EQ. There's often an EQ on a group or an output, and that frequently has many more bands available than just the four. Depends on the console. And then there's also graphic EQs, which you can might be able to insert onto channels or groups or something like that. But then kind of more esoteric tools that are out there are things like the Dugan Auto Mixer, things like the dynamic EQs that are available, any noise reduction plugins, compressors, and also primary source enhancers. And I think it's worth kind of going around and saying, you know, what are the tools that you use all the time? What are the tools that you don't really bother with, or is it situation dependent? And what do they actually do? Because there's a lot of stuff in the desks that people don't really know how to use it the right way. And it's probably worth sharing. You're muted, Andy.
Look at me. How many audio professionals does it take?
Six.
I was volunteering to go as tribute and go first. I'll say, like, I mean, if I'm in a situation where I'm just in the console these days, it's mostly on Yamaha. Although I think at this point, any console that I'd be willing to accept has some semblance of those tools, which is the Dugan or some sort of auto mixer, which I'll usually insert by default just because it's easier to have it and not need it. You know, obviously, if you've only got a single presenter at a time, it's not really doing you a ton unless you're getting into, when we get into streaming, if we have time, we can talk about places where that becomes useful again. But generally for a single presenter, I won't, but I like having it there for inevitably when a second presenter jumps on or when we get Q&A going, because there's always going to be an interjection from the questioner again halfway through the answer when you least expect it. That's it. It only takes you a couple gigs to realize you might ride the question mic down. You don't take it out unless you've got a real good line of sight and a fast finger on it of the questioner. I think we've all been burned by that at some point.
Not me. Never. Never in my whole career, ever.
Yeah. And then, right. and obviously Dugan or whatever other auto mix you're using is the one insert we usually want post-fade. Because otherwise the other mics are going to be riding your main mic down. And then on the pre-fade side, always, if I'm using some sort of primary source enhancer, whether PSE, the Dugan 5045, any of those, particularly the Dugan and particularly the Yamaha emulation of the Dugan really, really wants a hot signal. So that I'm almost always going to want pre. It also just, I think, works better pre.
I'm going to be that guy. It's a Neve, not a
Dugan. Sorry. Oh my God. Yes. Sorry. It's no, early for all. I've been flying for like three out of the.
You're
last
good, man.
4 days.
I just want to make sure when people start Googling Dugan. Yeah.
No, you're right. You're totally right. You're wrong. Real smart dude invented it. Yes, it is the Neve 5045. Yeah, so that's always going to go pre for me, both to hit it with the hard level we need and to make sure it's doing the most it can.
So how do you figure out your input level for that exact situation? Because I've definitely found leaving enough headroom that someone clapping in front, or let's exclude clapping, but leaving enough headroom that someone being loud in front of a microphone won't clip it out often creates a situation where it's not loud enough to drive the 5045 hard enough. And most of the time, you know, unless lavs, it's a little different, but especially like lecterns, I run into that. And so often it's one of those things that gets inserted, but I don't end up really getting as much use out of it as I think I could or should. And now Andy ran away, so he can't answer the question.
Sorry, no, the dog just came back from the walk and was scratching at the door, so we're going to let Braille in to visit. hey, buddy. Yeah, I mean, and that's also, that was the challenge I was going to get into, is on the Yamaha side, especially if you're on a CL or QL, your insert points are limited in getting together, so you have to start doing all sorts of weird tricks to... And that's one of the trade-offs you have to make when using a 5045 and a Dugan is which do I use? Because the Dugan needs to be post, the 5045 needs to be pre. It can get tricky. It's one of many, many reasons, money being no object, I like myself a PM if I'm in Yamaha world.
All right, I'll be the first one to embarrass myself and just admit out loud that I put the Dugan on the insert along with a dynamic EQ, and I put the 5045 on the bus. And I'd drive that bus into the fucking wall to get the level that
and
I need.
I was going to say, if I need to use a Dugan and that on the same thing, I will do that if I have to. I prefer to do it. Because
I'm on a CL. Or I mean, I'm on a QL, so I
yeah, do the same I, with the I prefer voice. To do it on an input because it's going to get me a little more, and it's going to do it to each. Because for those who don't know what the 5045, they will tell you it's not a gator and expander. It's a gator and expander.
Real schmancy one. But
it's a very, very particularly tuned and smartly designed one, but it's very rapidly ducking the mic or pulling it out anytime the person isn't actually talking. And it's a thing I've said on here before and definitely said at the Discord that, in my mind, it's not a tool you use instead of ringing something out to get gain. It's a tool you use to get that little bit extra more at the end.
1,000%.
And like I've definitely had moments like shows where like literally punching it out, like suddenly you hear that ringing start to swell that's not there because it's nipping. Because we all get those times where like the way the room is and the way the mics are tuned, if they're talking, it doesn't really excite that energy to get feedback. But as soon as they stop talking, if they're in front enough of the PA, then suddenly it's just stuff starts to bloom up a little bit and the 5045 is really good at nipping that in the bud. And to do that best, it should be on the individual channel, but yeah, particularly on a CL or a QL, that's not always practical.
And I will second what Aram said, which is, it is one of the things in my particular workflow that is, let's call it optional, but it's the one thing where I'm like, that is working today or that is not working today. and it comes in or out as needed. Agreed. Often I find that I make it work, but there are definitely times where you're like, nope, bypass. That's just not going to work. But for me, the Dugan is inserted on the channel at all times, regardless, because if it's not working, it's not working. And when it is working, it's saving your ass. You know what I mean? Like, it's not hurting anything by being there that I can think of, unless somebody smarter than me has got a reason. But
we're talking the Dugan, or we're talking the
Dugan on the channel is always inserted for me, right?
Okay.
And the 50-45 is the one thing that I can take in and out and go like,
gotcha.
Man, that's really nice sometimes. And other times you're like Aaron was saying, you're just not getting enough level, or the person's like terrified of their own voice and whispering rather than using their big boy voice. You got to take it out because it won't get enough level to make it work action properly. You know, won't make it work right.
Yeah. And I'm going to jump in here and be that guy. The 50-45 annoys the fuck out of me. It's
attaboy. Get him.
In the right circumstances, when I can hit it with a hot signal and I really want between phrases for things to be clean, then fine. But out in the real world with like different levels of voices coming up and, you know, all of a sudden it's cutting off phrase. I mean, it is, it's like any gate or expander or anything else. It can be helpful in some circumstances, but I spent so much time on a cedar and then I kind of lost access to my cedar, and so I tried to sort of replace it with a 50-45, and they're very, very different tools.
Well, bro, that's like cheating.
Yeah, and it's just like like Aaron said, just like you have to hit it hard. So then, where does it go in the chain? If you put it on the bus, which is valid, but now I have to make sure I'm always hitting that bus hard. Or it's not going to open up properly. I don't know. Like I will use it in the right circumstances, and it can help clean up records and, you know, get some of the extra room noise out of the microphone. But I don't know. I find myself as more frustrated with it than going, oh, this was the answer to my hopes, prayers, and dreams. Now in like more broadcasty situations, I've had better luck with it because then, yeah, maybe using OmniLobs or things like that where there's a lot more room in there and I really want to get more of that out. But in a live situation with PA, I don't know. I'm moving more and more away from it just because I know what it does, but the trade-offs just haven't really been worth it. Well, and again, in a QLCL situation where you're fighting insert points and you want the 50-45 ahead, you know, pre-fader, and you want the Dugan post-fader, and you know, it just I find myself like standing on my head trying to get what I want out of it. Now, yeah, as soon as I get a Rivage, then you know, all bets are off. I don't mind having it in, but you know, as you said, if you can't punch it out quickly, it can sometimes really bite you because then all of a sudden it's cutting off words of a quiet person. And those are the kinds of things in a corporate that people really notice. You know, I don't know how many people are going to notice, oh, I got a little bit cleaner microphone. But everyone's going to notice when like three or four syllables get cut off on the really, really quiet speaker. And that's, so anyway, that's my unpopular opinion.
I really like using it on DJs and front of house VOG microphones because those are strong, consistent sources that it does pay to be able to have less than background noise because it's the DJ's full back of their music screaming in there. And I want that to be clean and not have to rely on the Dugan because the Dugan's going to open it up. If I had the DJ, if they're bouncing back and forth to a host or a moderator. So I feel like it's good there because they're usually good mic technique, strong to the mic. In front of house VOG, as long as I'm able to coach the person who's doing those, it can do it. But yes, otherwise, I've similarly found it, especially with a show that's not as well rehearsed or people who aren't used to public speaking, that it can bite you more with inconsistent levels. But those two specific use cases, I like it.
Yeah, agreed. I agree 100%.
Yeah, and I will say again on like on a CLQL, it's always that trade off. It's not a tool I will always use, and I think agreed, it is a tool I will set up so I have it, but use as a problem solver, not as a go to. And then going down the chain of like other aside from like normal things like channel EQ and comp, I will particularly on a Yamaha almost always put a dynamic EQ. Whether it's on the input or the group can vary a bit, particularly because like if you're on a CLQL, you only have so many slots. So there I may do it on the group. Part of the reason for that is it is my personal opinion, although I know I'm not the only person in this opinion, that Yamaha's dedicated de-esser mode for their channel dynamics is not very well functioning. But
you, sir, are correct.
A high shelf on that dynamic EQ works really well. And that's the other trick I'll throw out, which one of the guys at SSL taught me, is that sibilance can be a lot broader and often lower than you think it is. And particularly if you've got multiple channels or if you're doing it on a lav bus instead of on an individual input, a high shelf will probably get you 80 to 90% of the way there with a lot less having to like drive it around differently for each person than a notch or a bell would. So I've become a big fan of, I use that like two band dynamic EQ and I've got a low shelf to deal with any proximity if I'm using a directional mic and that high shelf to deal with the DS. And that gets me 90% of the way there. That's kind of where I land on like onboard stuff. Outboard, we've talked a bit about, and I know Aram has one, I'm not sure if anybody else does, the Yamaha RUIO16, which is a little 16-channel Dante box that, as we've, I think I've talked before on the show, the reason I ended up getting one is because it's got a real quick bypass button that'll move its Dante inputs right to his Dante outputs and take anything outboard out. You got to be careful there, because depending on what you're doing with that box, that could bite you in different ways of like massive gain jumps or things like that. But as long as you're prepared for it, it can be a useful way to hedge your bets. And stuff I've been using outboard a lot is I will use a better de-esser sometimes. And again, I'll usually do that on the group. Which one I'm still kind of up in the air on. I've been kind of rotating through Waves Simulance. I forget what the other Waves de-esser is, and Isotopes, all of which are like zero latency plugins and do different things. And I'd be curious for folks who do here and at home too, who do use de-esser plugins, to which ones do you like and why. The other thing I've been using a lot lately when I'm not on a Ravage or when I don't have an outboard seeder, which Brian had mentioned, is Isotope Voice Denoise, which is again shockingly zero latency, and it's a dynamic. I don't even fully understand other. I think it's very, very narrow notch gates that are kind of dynamically assigned, but we'd have to talk to one of the nerds who builds them to actually understand how these things work. But they're very good at figuring out what is voice and what is not and pulling it out of there. And particularly for the price, that Isotope plugin is astoundingly good. Like, is it as good as the Cedar? Not quite. But it costs a fraction less for the, and yeah, I mean, Cedar, there is finally a plugin version that doesn't need dedicated UA hardware. And it's still, as plugins go, kind of obscenely expensive because it's Cedar. Now, Brian, I know you use the hardware DNS a lot. Do you actually own one, or is that something you rent for gigs?
I did actually own one for a while. I did eventually get rid of it because long story. I worked for a company for about 5 years that had them in stock. And so then I just had them all the time. And so that's part of the reason why I got addicted. And the dance, the DANSE, emulation in the Ravage, and I believe it's in the new DM7, is a really, really good emulator for the Cedar. And Cedar done right is an amazing, that's one that you can put on almost everything. And as long as you go easy on it, it will just make everything cleaner and be completely transparent.
Yeah, and two things I'll say on the dance, which is an amazing emulation and one of many, many reasons I love a Ravage anytime I can get it, is A, if you're in the latest updates to the version 6 software, they've gotten rid of the extremely disconcerting bug where after you hit the learn button on dance, audio would not alter at all for a good 10 seconds or so, and it would definitely make you clench a bit. So if you have avoided using a dance or because of that, they have acknowledged and fixed that in one of the recent updates. And the other thing, which I think Brian was kind of getting to in passing, is that while the default settings work great, if you know what frequency range you are trying to get rid of, you can narrow those handles in, and it becomes that much more powerful because the bands can be narrower. And it also takes out the worry of hacking at something you don't want by mistake. And I mean, I've had shows where I've put it on 4099s on like wind and string instruments that were a little too far and picking up too much room. And yeah, if you tune it just to that part where you're getting the hiss or the buzz, like it's also one of the best ways to remove bass amp buzz I've ever had.
Yep. I'm nodding vigorously because I've had to do that exact thing.
Yeah, and you just kind of, like, particularly if you dial it in tight to the range that you want to make sure you're not, like, losing the fundamental. I mean, you don't even really have to, but it gets that much better when you do. Yeah, that's been a big one. I'm curious if anybody's tried, I think, because Waves make their spin on that now, too. Has anybody used that? Yeah, I think we've got homework. Or have you, Michael?
I have a handful of times, and it's worked well. I get handful meaning two, so a couple of times.
Right. Is that the clarity? Is that what they call that?
Actually, just the W84 WNS.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
So it's like an older processor, but it's similar six band guy. And it was on a Waves LV1 I was doing for a political gig, and it was actually outdoor, and it was more for wind noise and road noise rather than like dial or room. And it worked well. So.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my next questions was, because I know that's one of those things, if I'm doing a record or stream, that's one of the first things I'm going to drop in. But I've also taken to doing it when I'm just doing in-room sound too, and I'm curious folks' feelings on that side of the question.
It actually does more of what you would hope a 5045 does than that. So, you know, helping get rid of the extra room that leaks in, and it's a lot easier to ride the tightness control, at least in the Yamaha implementation of it. And I have also found adjusting that range so that you're not necessarily getting rid of all the super high-endy stuff, because if you let it, it will totally make it so that, when someone stops talking, it is almost dead silent. And I know Brian has some thoughts on it maybe shouldn't actually be dead silent when someone's not talking in the room, but or for a stream, let's say. But the in-room sound and what happens for the PA, it really does help clean up that too.
Well, and I don't know how much time we have left, so I don't know if we can completely pivot into this, but yes, one of the things that you want to watch out for is when you're doing a recording, or especially when you're doing a stream, like we've talked about all of the different ways that we can clean up lectern mics and clean up lav mics so that it's like all we're hearing is what they're saying and we're hearing nothing else. But then in a stream, that ends up sounding really weird because now we don't hear any of the room. We have no sense that this person is speaking to a live audience. It sounds like they're in a studio, and that's where you start to dial in your ambient mics. The great thing is that if you can control all of the ambience that you're getting from the talent mics, then you can add exactly how much ambience you want to give that still a natural sound of people are in a room. You now have control over it as opposed to just a bunch of stuff leaking into the lectern mic. And it also just means that all of that extra ambient sound, one of the things that took me 25 years to realize was the ambient sound in the room, that was coming back into my lectern mic was being reamplified back into the room, creating more of itself and coming back into the lectern mic. I mean, it's not true feedback, but the amount of ambience that's being produced out of the PA adds to that ambient sound in the room, which you already have plenty of because the room is already reflecting. But yeah, the more we clean these things up, the more we really have to look at making sure that we have some kind of ambient something to kind of fill in the holes for streaming and to some degree for records.
You know, that brings us perfectly to the next question I was going to ask and the other subject that I wanted us all to talk about. But looking at the clock, we're already almost at an hour here. So I'm going to say let's pause it for this week and we'll come back and continue this in part two next week. And on that note, then, good to have you back with us this week after your week away, Sean. And good to have you back in the guest chair again, Aram, after joining us last week.
Yeah.
Thanks to Brian and Michael for hanging out with us today.
And thanks to Alan Heath and RCF for supporting us and making it happen. We appreciate all you guys. And that's the pod. See you next week.